This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. Ariel Sharon may survive the brain hemorrhage he suffered yesterday, but it seems highly unlikely he'll be able to resume his position as Prime Minister of Israel or lead his new political party in elections that are set for March. Just a few months ago, Sharon turned Israeli politics on its head when he broke away from his base in the right-wing Likud to form a centrist party called Kadima, which was widely expected to win those elections. Now, who knows? As an army officer, minister of defense, and as prime minister, Ariel Sharon has cast an enormous shadow for more than 40 years. He was hailed as a military hero in the Yom Kippur War of 1973 and denounced for the invasion of Lebanon in 1982 and for his part in massacres at Palestinian refugee camps in West Beirut. He championed the establishment of Jewish settlements, then last year forced settlers to withdraw from their homes in Gaza and parts of the West Bank. There is no immediate heir apparent, no comparable figure in any of Israel's political parties. If you have questions about what happens next, about the effects in Israel, in the Palestinian territories, in the region, or what happens to the peace process, our number here in Washington is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. The email address is totn@npr.org. We're going to begin in Jerusalem, and Scott Wilson is there as the bureau chief of the Washington Post. He's with us on the line, and nice to have you with us today on Talk of the Nation, Scott.
Thanks for having me.
What's the latest on Prime Minister Sharon's condition?
Doctors at the hospital where he is gave a briefing to reporters and said that he was in a critical condition, and he will be sedated for the next 48 hours, but that he is responding to some stimulus in his eyes, his pupils are reacting. Some signs are positive, although they cautioned that it would be at least 48 hours until they knew for sure how he endured the nearly 8 hours of surgery.
Not in a vegetative state. There is brain activity.
That's right.
Okay. What are doctors saying about the chances of recovery?
They're guarded. They're both positive and also very cautious about the whole thing. Again, he's breathing on a respirator. He's deeply sedated, is their words, and they're just not sure entirely how he did, and won't know much for about 48 hours, I think.
Right now, the vice premier Ehud Olmert has taken over for Sharon. Tell us a little bit about him.
He's a longtime ally of Sharon. He is a two-time mayor of Jerusalem. He left the Likud party with Sharon last November when Sharon formed the Kadima party. He's also changed his political positions quite a bit over the years, as many Israeli politicians have, including Sharon. But the Israeli public in past polls have shown a lack of trust in him. Yet polls taken today by some Israeli media show that Kadima, with Olmert as its leader, would do very well in March general elections, maybe winning as many as 40 seats in the 120-seat Knesset, which is about what Sharon was polling. These should be taken with a little bit of a grain of salt, considering there's probably a lot of sympathy being expressed in these polls. But people really are in Kadima rallying around him right now as a possible leader and trying to avoid any kind of divisive leadership struggle to replace the prime minister.
What are Israelis saying? What are you hearing about a future? Again, Sharon may survive, but we will unlikely to see him again as a political figure.
That's very true. I don't think anyone is saying anything other than that. Today, while being gracious about wishing the prime minister a speedy recovery and expressing concern for his health, there is a lot of concern about the political situation, especially among Kadima members, I think, because they really took a gamble last November in joining this new centrist movement. And it really built around the personality and the abilities of Ariel Sharon. And now they're without him, and they're without an obvious leader, no leader of his stature. And they're very worried that the more established parties, Labor and Likud, could really benefit from this. And maybe they made mistakes by leaving their old parties behind.
Mm-hmm. What have those established parties been saying themselves today?
They are remaining largely quiet about this. Some Likud Central Committee members are saying that there's perhaps a way for Kadima and Likud to join forces at some point, maybe not exactly combining parties, but at least participating in some kind of a coalition government. But they're not saying much more than that. They want to see, I think, what Kadima does, who they choose as the leader. There is no party list for this for Kadima yet. It was all in Sharon's head. It was very fluid and a work in progress. And now the party members are really left to try to figure this out for themselves.
So at least for the time being, the way ahead seems murky.
Absolutely. Very confused. There's openings for people both in Labor and in Likud. Benjamin Netanyahu, who is the Likud leader now, could benefit possibly from concerns about Kadima's security credentials now that Sharon's maybe not in the picture anymore. And Labor has an opportunity perhaps to take some centrist voters back from Kadima, who were leaning towards Sharon and his plan, whatever that might have been.
Scott Wilson, thanks very much. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Scott Wilson joined us from Jerusalem, where he's the bureau chief for The Washington Post. With us now is Yaron Ezrahi. He's professor of political science at Hebrew University of Jerusalem and joins us by phone from his home in Jerusalem. And it's nice of you to stay up to talk to us.
Hello.
What do you think is going to happen to the Kadima party now?
I think the chances are that while its size will be reduced, the Kadima party will stay because it responded to a demand symbolized by the great popularity of Sharon's withdrawal from Gaza. And that is the readiness to recognize that the settlements were a historic mistake and form now an unbearable burden on Israel's security, diplomacy, and a sense of welfare. And the great admiration for Sharon was connected with the fact that he was the first and only political figure who proved that he could take the risks necessary, political risks, to perform this act, which is considered by the Israeli majority opinion as absolutely necessary, vital for Israel's interest.
And as you say, let me ask you, is there anybody else of comparable stature to take similar kinds of risks?
Right now, there is none. But I want to remind you that in your own history, although there is a huge difference between Roosevelt and Sharon, also, Truman, as a vice president, was not very much of a known figure and not very much, there were no high expectations. And yet, in retrospect, he grew in the job and became one of the greatest presidents in American history. So I do think that a lot depends on what the new generation of leaders, which are emerging now, will show. If some of them, and one of them especially, will emerge as a personality which can command such trust and show such skills, this is time will show.
President Truman had the advantage of a well-established political party. Whoever succeeds Mr. Sharon in Adima does not.
Well, in Israel, you know, we have a multi-party system. It's a coalition parliamentary system. And you don't need to have a majority party. You just need to be the head of a party which is the largest party under the present electoral system. And that would mean that even if it has one mandate more than the other large party, it could give the head of that party the chance to form a government.
If you'd like to join the conversation, give us a phone call, 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. The email address is totn@npr.org. And let's begin with Roger. Roger calling from San Francisco.
Yes, thank you for this opportunity. You know, I have nothing but praise for Sharon in the fact that he was able to see that demographics alone was going to change the character of Israel. And thereby saying that, he pulled out of Gaza. I'm sorry he's not going to be around much longer as an effective leader, because I think he would probably move towards pulling out more West Bank settlements. The only way that peace can exist in Israel is if the Palestinians have a viable state, and they have something. And I must say again, Sharon, it seems like military leaders are the only effective peacemakers. I would like to see labor back in power, but God bless Sharon for what he did.
Roger, thanks very much for the call. Yaron Ezrahi that Sharon might have decided to pull out of more settlements on the West Bank, but that would have been after the new mandate of a new election.
Yes, there's no question about it. He was clearly committed to take the necessary and difficult steps of moving the country towards greater and larger withdrawal from territories occupied during the Six-Day War. And while it's unlikely that he would have finished that job, it has a tremendous impact. It would have been a great impact on the future if he were able to continue the act that he started in Gaza. It looks like Sharon was cut down just before the major act that he wanted to finish the job, or at least move very close to the end line of this process. Right now, we have a situation where the leadership of both the Palestinians and the Israeli communities, Israeli and Palestinian nations, is more fragmented. And at this moment, there is no figure in either side that seems to command enough authority and power to bind their respective people to agreement at the negotiation table.
Yeah. Yaron Ezrahi, thank you very much for being with us tonight.
Welcome.
That's a professor of political science at Hebrew University of Jerusalem. We'll have more after the break. This is NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. Israeli Prime Minister Ariel Sharon suffered a serious stroke yesterday and underwent surgery to stop bleeding in his brain. He remains gravely ill in a hospital in Jerusalem. It seems unlikely that he can return to public life. Today we're talking about how his absence from politics will affect Israel, the peace process, and the region. If you'd like to join us, 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. The email address is totn@npr.org. We turn next to Daoud Kutab, a Palestinian columnist for Jordan Times and the Jerusalem Post, director of the Institute of Modern Media at Al-Quds University in Ramallah, and he's with us now on the line from Amman in Jordan. And thanks very much for being with us this evening.
Thank you.
How has the news of Sharon's condition been received in the Arab world?
The news has been received with mixed opinions, I think. There hasn't been a lot of commentary. One or two of the stations got it wrong that he has already passed away. But by and large, there hasn't been a lot of strong opinions either way. In the Palestinian community, there is worry that this will mean that there will not be a strong leader to produce any kind of a real peace process now that if Sharon is no longer in the political realm, and then we have to kind of train somebody else, and somebody else has to kind of catch up to where we've all reached. But, you know, people didn't really like Sharon. He had a lot of Palestinian blood on his hands. He has been involved in attacks physically, and he basically was in charge of attacks all the way in the 50s in Qibya until Sabra and Shatila, and he's been very tough in dealing with the Palestinians, although the Sharon of 2005 has been one that looked like he had a kind of a conversion, moved closer to understanding that there has to be a land for peace settlement. So there is a bit of a mixed opinions, but I think people would be very happy to see that somebody else would carry out his legacy, but move it and not to have so much emotional baggage with him as Sharon had.
Yes, if he was regarded as the devil, at least he was the devil they knew.
Yes, and there isn't, and of course people don't want to see Netanyahu back in power, so there is a little bit of confusion as to who is going to lead. Olmert is not very well known politically. People knew him when he was mayor, but that was more of a municipality issue. Although, again, the fact that he's not known is might be a plus for him if he can carry out the legacy of Sharon without any of the baggage that Sharon had.
Mm-hmm. Has there been any mention of a lot of people for the past couple of years had said, you know, maybe real progress is not going to be possible until the leaders who had been there so long, Yasser Arafat and Ariel Sharon, have left the scene. Well, effectively now in the past year, both have.
Yes, I read a commentary on a Palestinian website that actually talked about that the generals and the older guard are, you know, no longer there. In the Palestinian elections due on the 25th, we're having the main party, the Fatah, headed by a young, now prisoner, Marwan Barghouti. So we might have a situation in 2006 where you have a whole new ball game. And I think it might be, you know, if cross our fingers, it might be a chance in 2006. You have to understand that basically everybody in the world knows what the solution of the conflict is going to look like. It's going to be some type of a Palestinian state on the 67 borders with some adjustments for the big settlement blocks and some kind of a issue dealt with Jerusalem. The problem has been an emotional one. Who's going to be able to move the people towards that agreement that people think is going to happen? Sharon has now created a legacy that might be moving towards that direction. The Palestinians are quite ready for this. So in a very kind of dark almost divine intervention, we might have the unique opportunity in 2006 for some change.
Let's get another caller on the line, and this is Jessica. Jessica calling us from Gloucester in Massachusetts.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I think it's really important to consider how the interim prime minister is going to deal with the current crisis in the Palestinian elections. It seems essential for those elections to be valid that the issue of Palestinians in East Jerusalem and whether they'll be allowed to vote be resolved.
Mm-hmm.
And this was an issue leading up to right when Sharon had his stroke. And being interested in the news, I have no idea how Olmert would rule on this, but it seems important to consider what his take on this particular crisis is going to be in terms of security in the next couple of months for the region.
Yes, we should point out, of course, Palestinian elections are coming up as well. Daoud Kattab?
What is going to be done about the East Jerusalem Palestinians in this election?
Yeah, it is one of the issues that unfortunately was basically on the table to be decided on. Two senior officials from the White House were supposed to be coming to Jerusalem, I think, tomorrow, and unfortunately they postponed, and that's very unfortunate because it is an issue that hasn't been resolved. I think if they allow the status quo that existed during the presidential elections when Mahmoud Abbas was elected and Palestinians in East Jerusalem, myself included, went to public institutions and voted, if that would be allowed, I think that would be acceptable for everybody. And I think that this is what's going to happen. I don't think the Israelis are going to go against what President Bush and the White House spokesman said yesterday, that they want East Jerusalemites to be involved. So I think it's going to be resolved, but without a lot of fanfare.
Okay, good. Thank you.
Thanks for the call, Jessica. Yet to be resolved also is the, well, I guess, chaos that's currently reigning in Gaza.
Yes, that's a huge problem. And even today, Mahmoud Abbas almost kind of lifted his hands and saying, I don't know what to do about it. It's very, very unfortunate. There is certain poverty there. There is, you know, people are really poor and people do have, unfortunately, still many guns, most of them from Mr. Abbas's own party. And they are using the fact that they have weapons to basically extract either jobs or the release of their friends and so on. It's a big problem. There is hope that once the elections do take place, if they do take place in time, especially in Gaza, that the new leaders of the Palestinian community would feel that they have been empowered by the elections and don't need to go to these chaotic actions to basically have their voices heard.
Is there a prospect then, and we can all paint to darker futures, but is there a prospect of both polities emerging, you know, concerned about the uncertainties of their own political future and arriving at and moving ahead?
As I said, if we cross our fingers and hope, there is, I mean, so many different pieces of the puzzle are ready to be set to go in that direction. I think there is, in a very funny way, the lack of kind of the emotionalism that was connected with the Yasser Arafat and now with Sharon and with others might actually allow for cool-headed leaders behind the scenes to drum up a basic solution that can at least get us moving in the direction of allowing Palestinians a normal life in independence and freedom. It's going to require more American involvement. But I think what Sharon has done in getting out of Gaza, in breaking up the settlers' stranglehold on the government, in breaking up the Central Committee of the Likud stranglehold on Israeli politics, I think that's very interesting. Now there is more of a normality in Israel with the kind of a centrist party and left-wing and a right-wing parties. So in a way, there is chances, but there's so many things that can go wrong.
Mm-hmm. And there's got to be consideration, too, Mahmoud Abbas in the old guard of Fatah, that it may need a way to new generation.
Absolutely. I mean, I think if the elections go on schedule, if the results come out as we were expecting, somewhere about 40% for the Fatah, about 25% for Hamas, and if some way can be found to get Marwan Barghouti out of jail and to help lead as a well-respected leader who's been in jail and so on, I think we can have a situation where people can try to find common ground. It's a lot of ifs there, but again, as I say, there are many pieces of the puzzle that are there ready to be set. Mm-hmm. It's going to also require a lot of international support. The EU and certainly the US have to do a lot more, as Condoleezza did, Ms. Rice did when she came the last time. That needs to be followed up even some more.
But certainly a sense that maybe the ground has shifted. Which way yet, we're not quite so sure.
Yes.
Daoud Kutab, thank you very much for being with us. We appreciate your time.
You're welcome.
Daoud Kutab is a columnist and a director of the Institute of Modern Media at Al-Quds University in Ramallah. We reached him today in Amman, Jordan. Well, joining us here in Studio 3A is Robert Malley. He's director of the International Crisis Group's Middle East Program, a special assistant to President Clinton on Arab-Israeli affairs from 1998 to 2001. He's here in Studio 3A. Thanks very much for joining us today.
Good to be here.
So what about the American role? Obviously, we've heard statements from the administration praying for his recovery and whatnot, but certainly Washington has to be looking to the way ahead.
Well, I think these are genuine prayers because if you look back at the first term of the Bush administration, nothing that the Bush administration did, they did independently. It was almost always in reaction to what Sharon did, who was really the engine of whatever process existed between Israelis and Palestinians. And the U.S., which didn't want to get particularly involved in this issue, was spared the need to make difficult policy choices because it could always rely on Sharon to make the decisions and then they would react to them. Now, if assuming, as everyone is assuming right now, that Sharon will no longer be in charge of Israeli policies, they won't be somebody who has that capacity to really change the environment surrounding him, the U.S. is going to face the burden of having to come up with its own decisions over the next 3 years.
Because it was Sharon who came up with the Gaza settlements policy. Sharon who also started the policy of erecting the barrier between Israel and the West Bank.
Everything good, bad, and in between that's happened in the last 5 years has come from Sharon, and in many cases would not have happened without him. That's certainly the case of the disengagement from Gaza, by the construction of the fence, barrier, or wall, the isolation, marginalization of Yasser Arafat, the tough military steps that were taken against the Palestinians, and what everything else that's happened, he has been able to pull off in ways that nobody would have expected when he first took office.
And let's add another voice to the conversation now. Rami Khoury, editor-at-large of the Daily Star, a newspaper based in Lebanon, and he joins us from his home in Beirut. Nice to have you back on the program.
Thanks for having me.
Can you give us some sense of the place that Ariel Sharon held in Palestinian and Arab politics? His last move before his hospitalization was to set a security zone area in the northern Gaza Strip, widely seen as hindering efforts to maintain calm and for Palestinians to organize legislative elections.
Well, I think the fact that he was trying to set up a security zone in northern Gaza, similar to the one that had utterly failed in southern Lebanon, is probably the most shocking testament to the failure of his policies. I think Sharon, while he's being widely touted in many parts of the West, and especially in the Bush White House, as a man of peace and a daring and courageous political operator, I think the reality is that most of his policies have not worked very well. He has not brought security, peace, acceptance, or normalcy to the Israeli people. He has not quieted the Palestinian resistance. He has not generated better ties with other Arab countries. He leaves behind a fractured, confused, fearful political landscape in Israel and Palestine together. There's a lot of uncertainty that he leaves behind. I mean, at every level of his actions, I think if we look back on it more dispassionately than perhaps people are able to do now in the moment of emotion when he's obviously ill and in hospital, and we wish him well on the personal level, but on the political level, I think his legacy will be that of a master illusionist and a daring military leader, but a failed political leader.
We're talking about the future of Israel, the region, and the Middle East peace process without Ariel Sharon active in it. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And just let me reintroduce our guests. We're speaking with Robert Malley of the International Crisis Group and with Rami Khoury, editor-at-large of The Daily Star. And let's get put a lot of these questions in the mouths of our listeners. Let's go to Meredith. Meredith calling from Eugene, Oregon.
Yes, thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
Having not kept up with the political situation in the Middle East, I'm wondering if there's anyone in the wings as a political leader who has a military background and a leaning towards peace and is in Israeli politics that might have a chance of moving up. And my second question, is there anything that individual Americans can do to help the situation?
Robert Malley?
To take my answer off the air.
Okay, thanks for the call, Meredith.
Well, you know, Prime Minister Sharon really was unique in the way that he developed sort of a symbiosis with the Israeli people. And he managed to bring together many contradictory impulses, the impulse to hit the Palestinians back and hit them hard, but also the impulse no longer to occupy them in a way, but to separate from them. The impulse not to trust the Palestinians and not to trust agreements with Arabs. There was never an agreement with an Arab that he saw that he didn't distrust. But at the same time, not to hold Israel hostage to that skepticism and to move forward unilaterally again by disengaging from Gaza. So Sharon managed to capture these very inchoate, contradictory sentiments of that form the consensus of the Israeli people. There's nobody out there today who can do quite the same. There are people who will appeal to Israeli sense of wanting more security. There are people going to appeal to the desire to separate from the Palestinians and other pieces of the Sharon legacy. But the legacy as a whole, he alone could carry it. And that's why he is going to be very hard to replace.
And Rami Khoury, it is, of course, uncertain who will replace him, at least in the long term, Ehud Olmert acting as prime minister now. But it's a fairly short list. Are Palestinians, are Arabs reacting to the possibilities?
Well, I think there's a lot of skepticism in Palestine and throughout the Arab world, and has been for many years, about the differences in the personalities and the policies of the different groups who come to power in Israel, or sometimes you have a coalition government. People have become hardened to the changes of Israeli internal politics, and we've run the gamut from Barak to Rabin to Netanyahu, Sharon, and there just doesn't seem to be a huge difference in the eyes of most people in the Middle East. I don't necessarily share those views. I think there probably are some differences. But the vast majority of public opinion in the Arab world and in Palestine sees similar policies being practiced by different Israeli leaderships and coalition governments. I think the most important thing, rather than to look for a personality who can do what Sharon did, and Rob Malley is correct in that Sharon was really unique in his ability to bring together these different forces. Unfortunately, I think he failed in achieving very much, but he was unique, and the thing to do now is not to look for another person, but to try to respond and to mobilize that majority of Israelis that consistently says in public opinion polls they want to engage the Palestinians, they want to live in peace, they want to withdraw from most of the territories, even end many or most of the settlements, share Jerusalem. Even now you're getting Israelis 50% or so saying they're willing to talk to Hamas if Hamas does well in the elections. So there is a common sense, a human decency among ordinary Israelis that is not reflected in the Israeli government's policies, and this is what we'd like to see, and in Palestine as well.
We're going to take a short break. When we come back, more of our discussion on the Middle East politics without Ariel Sharon. Also, more of your calls. If you'd like to join us, 800-989-8255, or send us email, totn@npr.org. This is NPR News. Today we're talking about the political landscape of Israel and the Middle East with Ariel Sharon, apparently out of political life. He's attempting to recover from a massive stroke in a hospital in Jerusalem. Our guests are Rami Kouri, editor-at-large of the Daily Star in Lebanon, and Robert Malley, director of the International Crisis Group's Middle East program. If you'd like to join us, 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. The email address is totn@npr.org. And let's get another caller on the line. This is Sarah. Sarah calling from San Antonio.
Hi, how are you?
Very well, thanks.
What I'm hearing from this show is kind of an idealized version of Sharon from this butcher of a warrior and Sabra and Shatila and all these horrible things that he did in his past to this man who is, you know, giving up the Gaza settlements and ready to give up the West Bank settlements. And I think it's a little bit more nuanced than that. I think he was a little bit more practical. And when Rami Kouri talks about, you know, how brutally he's perceived in the Middle East, I think he was really quite a pragmatist. And I think that the rumors of the settlement era going down the drain are a little exaggerated.
Or at least premature. Do you think so, Rami Kouri?
That the settlements will be evacuated?
Yes.
I think it's pretty clear that they're building up a lot of the areas outside of Jerusalem and not looking at going back to the 1967 line anytime soon.
I think Rami Kouri may have joined us after. An earlier guest, Daoud Kitab, was talking about that the outlines of an overall agreement are fairly well agreed upon, that they would include more or less the lines of 67 with some adjustments for the big settlements on the West Bank.
Yeah, I think that's correct. I mean, some of the best work on this was done by Rob Malley and his colleagues at the International Crisis Group and their reports on the possible shape of a Palestinian-Israeli peace. And the Israelis, if they want real peace, they have to give back virtually all the land they occupied in 1967, and there will be some border adjustments. But the Ma'ale Adumims and those large cities will obviously become part of Israel in exchange for land of equal value. There is a consensus on that. The Israelis and Palestinians, I think public opinion is willing to make that kind of reasonable compromise that both adheres to international law and UN resolutions and is based on common sense and human decency, which is what Israelis and Palestinians want to see affirmed. And I think Ariel Sharon he encapsulated so many contradictions in his life, but I think in the end we have to judge him not on his bravado, but on the results of his policies. And I think so far the results of his policies have been pretty thin.
Okay, Sarah, thanks very much.
Thank you.
I'd like to ask you both, suddenly political uncertainty, enormous political uncertainty in Israel. Clearly, the same situation emerged in the Palestinian territories after the death of Yasser Arafat, but through the region, wider region, if you just look at the neighbors of those two entities, you've got Lebanon, where you are, Rami Kouri, which has undergone enormous changes and uncertainties in the past several months. And in Syria, there are threats to what had been regarded is a pretty stable regime, which seems a little wobbly. Jordan, there is as yet untested new king. Even in Egypt, there is a new political situation with so much of the Muslim Brotherhood now in parliament.
Yes, and I think this landscape is one that's very volatile. And again, if you go back over the last 25 years, you will find that a lot of the tension and the anger and the resentment that permeates public opinion and society in the Arab countries, places like Lebanon and Egypt and Jordan, they're very critical of Israel, and this anger has fueled a lot of the Islamists who are winning democratic elections, like the Muslim Brothers and Hamas and and Hezbollah, and a lot of this resentment is a direct reaction to the policies that people like Ariel Sharon have practiced as defense minister, foreign minister, prime minister, and housing minister in charge of the settlements. And the chickens are coming home to roost. And this is a real problem that has to be diffused throughout the region. And the only antidote is really democratic good governance and the rule of law, but applied equally to Israelis as well as to Palestinians and Arabs. And I think that's the way out of this crisis we have, both in Israel and Palestine and in the neighboring Arab countries.
Rob Malley, what about this changing context with all of this unrest in all of these countries?
Well, I think we've really seen some of the buried tensions and conflicts, as Rami just described, come to the surface, partly as a result of simply the fact that the anger reached boiling point, and partly as a result of a U.S. effort to restructure the region, probably not quite in the way that it's unfolded. But you're seeing not only a rise of Islamism, you're also seeing increased sectarianism, which includes divisions among Muslims, and what happened today in Iraq is just one evidence of that. But if you look at Lebanon, there's another example there and throughout the region. So you have Islamism, you have sectarianism, you have increased anger towards governments which are seen as neither representative nor responsive. So the whole region is going through a transition, very unclear towards what, but all of it happening at the same time, in part because so much of it is interconnected, and what happens in Iraq has immediate effect on Lebanon and Palestine and vice versa.
Let's get another caller on the line. This is Isaac. Isaac in Farmington Hills in Michigan.
Hi, nice to talk to you. I enjoy your show.
Thank you.
I just want to make a short point regarding the future of Israel and the Palestinian, regarding Sharon, stepping down. I think that it doesn't matter who's going to be in Israel, even if it's going to be Olmert or Livni or Netanyahu, whatever, Peres, whatever the guy who's going to be the prime minister, it doesn't matter. The fact is that the Palestinians have to have a leadership, a strong leadership that is willing to fight the terror, is willing to have one army, one institution, and even to pay in their life. They have to be like a civil war, maybe like happened in the United States after, between the South and the North. Because Israel and the Israeli people are willing to have peace. If everybody knows what's going to happen in the end. Jerusalem is going to be half, and the settlement is going to be out. But the question is, with who Israel will sign a peace agreement? Who is willing to guarantee that the peace agreement will be signed, will be fulfilled?
Rami Khoury, there is certainly a political lack of political unity on the Palestinian side.
Well, there certainly is, and it is due to a large extent to the policies of the Israeli government of fragmenting and dividing the Palestinians, killing a lot of the leaders of the militant groups. There is a huge problem of the integrity and coherence of Palestinian political society. But the Israelis were saying this before about Arafat, and then Mahmoud Abbas was elected, a democratically elected, suit-wearing, nice old man, peace-talking, wants to stop the militancy of the Intifada. And what happened? When the Israelis, Sharon could do nothing with him. Sharon kept expanding settlements.
But I think that it's not true.
Hold on, Isaac.
It's a problem that has to be addressed. That you can't just have unilateral demands on one side. Unilateralism is fine if the Israelis think it's going to protect them, but unilateralism will not bring a permanent peace agreement and Israeli acceptance, only engagement and applying the rule of law to both sides simultaneously. So, yes, there is a problem on the Palestinian side. There's an equally big problem on the Israeli side. And until we decide to address them both, we're not going to get anywhere.
Isaac, I'm sorry. I was just trying to give Rami Khoury a chance.
I'm just saying that. It's just like, again, all this talking about Israel is fault. Israel knows that they have to have peace. All the Israeli people want peace. I used to live in Israel for 26 years. We want peace. We just want somebody that we agree and sign the agreement that will fulfill it. Let's ask you a question. Do you know any country in the whole world that after so many wars, they still, after 50 years, still sitting in refugee camp and nobody cares? Where's all the... No, my family left Poland and lost all the property and land after the Holocaust. I don't see them still sitting outside Poland in a refugee camp waiting for that the land will come back to them. The Palestinians have to see the reality. There's so much potential in Gaza to make it like beautiful. There's beautiful beaches. They can make it beautiful, but they don't want to. They just want to keep fighting, and that's not to be the future. I don't see that.
Isaac, thanks very much for the call.
Yeah.
Rob Malley, though, Isaac's point about disunity on the Palestinian side certainly does have pose problems for whoever succeeds Ariel Sharon.
No doubt about it. I mean, just to come back to the point, not to get into the historical debate, clearly, you know, the fact that today Israel is prepared to make some concessions can't make the Palestinians forget that they've only accepted the notion of a Palestinian state a few years ago. Till today, they don't accept withdrawal to the borders of 67. They don't accept the division of Jerusalem. So it really does matter when you start. But today, looking at it today from an Israeli vantage point, I think it's absolutely clear that you view on the Palestinian side a situation of total anarchy, chaos, where there's no leadership with whom you could really negotiate, even if the Israelis were prepared to negotiate, as the caller said, a fair deal. Who would have the wherewithal today on the Palestinian side to sign an agreement, let alone then carry it through?
Deliver it, yeah.
There's definitely, and that's why the impulse of unilateralism is so strong and so appealing to Israelis, because they don't see on the other side. And what we're seeing on the Palestinians is obviously partly due to what Israel has done over the last few years. It's also, to a large extent, self-inflicted by the Palestinians themselves. But they are now in a situation where they can't make a valid case that they could negotiate the kind of agreement that at least the international public opinion believes would be a fair resolution of this conflict.
I wonder, do you agree with Rami Kouri when he suggests that Ariel Sharon's political legacy will be of policies unfulfilled and not much accomplished?
I think the verdict is probably going to be more mixed, but it also depends where you're looking at it from. From where Rami's looking at it, certainly the assessment is going to be quite negative because, as he said, Ariel Sharon has a lot of Arab and Palestinian and Lebanese blood on his hands. I think when people are going to look at what he's done over the last few years, they're going to say, here's the first prime minister in Israel in a long time who's been able to do something extremely significant in terms of moving Israel towards disengagement with the Palestinians. Now, he's not doing that for the sake of the Palestinians. Nobody thinks that he's doing this out of the generosity of his heart. He did it because he thought that it was in Israel's interest to begin to define for itself its final borders. These are not borders that the Palestinians are going to be happy with. It's not borders that the Palestinians are going to accept. But he felt that he had an opportunity to get rid of what was not vital in order to keep what he thought was essential.
Our guests are Rob Malley of the International Crisis Group and Rami Kouri, editor-at-large of the Daily Star. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And let's get another caller on the line. Hanasi, am I pronouncing that correctly?
Yes, sir, you are.
He's calling from Scottsdale, Arizona. That I can pronounce. Go ahead.
Yes, sir. The question I have is, everybody talks about Ariel Sharon and the Palestinians, but nobody ever addresses what the Arabic countries around Israel are willing to do to help the Palestinian cause, mainly the right of return for these millions of refugees in absorbing them. They just want to point the finger at, okay, it's Israel or it's Palestine, but these Arabs who use the Palestinians as a pawn do nothing to address this issue of the refugees. And I'll take my question off the line.
Okay, thanks very much for the call.
Thank you.
Rami Kouri?
Well, the Arab states can be criticized, certainly, for a lot of things, and they've done what they feel they can do to help the Palestinians at a humanitarian level. Some of them have given them citizenship, like in Jordan and other places, to some extent, the work opportunities in the Gulf. But in the end, the problem of the Palestinians is that they are refugees because of the creation of the State of Israel, not because of what the Arabs did to them. The resolution must be a political resolution and a redress of grievance with the State of Israel. I think it's not really very relevant to talk about what the Arab states have done. Of course, they can do more, but the Arab states have proved to be collectively incompetent in diplomacy at a level that has probably not been seen for many, many centuries. So the Arab states are not a serious political player, unfortunately, in this situation, or something of absentee landlords.
Let's get another caller in. Peter in Miami.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I just have a quick question concerning Shimon Peres, not knowing Israeli politics. Is he even on the radar based on warming relations that he had most recently with Ariel Sharon, both parties coming together, and also based on the upcoming elections? Thank you.
Rob Malley, Shimon Peres, the former leader of the Labor Party, who took over as prime minister after the assassination of Yitzhak Rabin.
Yes, well, he after he lost the election to remain leader of the Labor Party, he switched allegiances and joined Sharon and his party, Kadima. He probably would have had and still will have a high position on the list, on the electoral list, but I don't think people are thinking of him as somebody who could, who should or would lead the party and who will be prime minister once again.
Mm-hmm. If either of you had to write down on paper today what you think is going to be happening over the next 3 months between now and the Israeli elections, what would you say? Rami Kouri?
I think the most significant thing that we have to look for, and this is really where I think Sharon has been significant, is that despite all the terrible things he's done in his life, which we will keep criticizing for, he did recognize in the last months that there can only be a move towards the center in Israel that can move the whole country towards a peace with the Palestinians and the other Arabs. So I think it's the center in Israel that we have to look at. Is this a phantom center, or is this a real center that can mobilize 60-70% of the Israeli population? If you know, politicians are pretty pragmatic people. If they see there's a constituency out there, they will cater to it. So I would look for sensible people in the center in Israel to come together with a really serious program to negotiate peace and security for Israel, and not the kind of magician's tricks that Sharon was giving us.
Rob Malley?
I think that's half the story, the story being on the Israeli side. And the question there is whether ultimately Sharon, who was much more a man who a party found than a party who found its leader, he was the center, became the center, and where he was, the center was. And the question is whether he was at it long enough so that that newfound center can survive his incapacitation or his death. The other side of the story, also elections, but on the Palestinian side, query whether they're going to take place as scheduled on January 25th, query what the outcome will be, and that's going to have a big impact, obviously, on Palestinian politics, but also on Israeli politics if they take place before the Israeli elections.
Rob Malley is director of the International Crisis Group's Middle East program. He joined us here in Studio 3A. Thanks, as always.
Thank you.
And Rami Kouri, as always, we appreciate your time.
My pleasure.
Rami Kouri, editor-at-large of The Daily Star, which is based in Lebanon. He joined us from his home in Beirut. Obviously, much more later today on NPR News about the latest on Prime Minister Sharon's condition and on the future of politics in Israel, in the region, and the future of the peace process. I'm Neil Conan. This is Talk of the Nation from NPR News.